The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Last day of the vacay for Gil Alexander. I'm Jonathan Von Tobel filling in today. We're going to have a fun show. Just one guest joining us today, but it's going to be in person. Paul Carr is going to be with us. Talk a little soccer, a little football. Had a wild night last night here in Las Vegas. USA-Mexico going at it once again. Americans getting a 3-0 win over Mexico. We'll talk about the shenanigans at the end of that game. Big picture. Also, of course, I didn't know this. I was looking up some stuff. We're about a week away from the start of the Gold Cup, so we got a lot to discuss.
Women's World Cup this summer well, in about a month. Yeah.
Yeah, I can't wait. I'm going to be out and about during the Gold Cup play. My wife's a big Gold Cup fan. I don't know if you're a fan of the Gold Cup, but she enjoys watching it.
Okay.
Put it that way. So yeah. Can't wait to watch it. All right. It is an interesting day. Kelly's here as well. I'm going to open up with something non-sports betting that I have to ask you about. It actually got ruined about 10 minutes ago. It's a very beautiful day out here in Las Vegas. I'm a big fan of rain, and it is raining. It's coming down pretty hard.
It's raining.
Before I left, my wife told me, here, and she threw something at me, and it was an umbrella.
I started cackling in the
I was walking through the sports book, spinning it like I was in like some 1960s, you know, like old school musical, just whistling and whatnot.
You had quite an entrance into the sports book.
When was the last time you used an umbrella? Because I figured I will tell you this. Usually I don't, but I figured because I'm going to be on camera that you didn't want like water spots all over me. So I was like, all right, it makes sense. I will use this. It didn't help that I'm a somewhat large man using a clear umbrella with a lot of flowers all over it. So it probably looked a little goofy. But when was the last time you used an umbrella? Because that was the first time in a long time that I've used one.
Okay, great question. Because, yes, we live in Nevada. And, yes, I've lived here for 5 years now. You've lived here your entire life.
Pretty much your entire life.
I mean, no, I have not used one a single time since I've lived here. But even in South Florida, like, I would actively dodge using them. So, like, even let's use you for example. You chose to park outside and walk outside of the South Point and use your umbrella to walk in when there's a perfectly good parking garage here that just connects.
Too long of a walk.
See, I just went and parked over there. I didn't have to grab an umbrella today.
But then you got
to
walk all the way over back there. Like, for those who don't know, the parking garage is very far in that direction.
It's like a whole 150 yards.
Yeah, it's pretty far. When I could just park on the side of the street here. It's one of the best-kept secrets at the South Point. Nobody ever really parks it.
Don't be giving out the secret.
I will say there's actually a lot of no parking signs there, but there's so many people that park back there that I feel like, all right, we're good. I'm not going to get in trouble. There you go. For those who are watching, to the left side of your screen, there's like a nice little alleyway that goes down the side of the South Point. What a beautiful shot.
Yeah.
This is not live, by the way, if you're watching. Right down the side of the street, there's an empty road, and, you know, that's where I park. It's where I usually park. Matt Eumanns showed it to me. Now that Eumanns is no longer with us, he's at the VSiN studio in Circa.
He is alive.
Yeah, he's alive. I use it in his honor. So I will say, I should specify, this is the first time that I've used an umbrella here in Las Vegas in a very long time. I want to say about 4 months ago, did take the kid to the opening of Super Nintendo World over there at Universal Studios, and it started hailing. So we had to run into the Harry Potter gift shop, which was right there, because I was in shorts and a T-shirt, and I had to buy an umbrella.
All of a sudden, $70 umbrella?
By the way, that turned into a $270 trip, because that's just with the merchandise, because it had to get a lot, including oversized Harry Potter Ravenclaw gloves for the wife and a jacket. It was absolutely ridiculous. But we have a lot of fun in store for today. We have more markets added. We were actually just talking, for those who didn't catch it, did a great episode with Luke Swain at Vegas Refund the other day on Hardwood Handicappers, previewing the NBA draft. One of the things that he brought up that he wanted to see out there in the market, top 10s. Well, guess what? That got posted yesterday, so we'll get to that. We have some news and names being attached to the Detroit Pistons as part of the NBA draft. That'll be all with us in about 15, 20 minutes from now. But we start with yesterday. How about this? This was great. There wasn't a 62 recorded in a round at the U.S. Open in 122 years before yesterday. Then within a 30-minute span, Both Ricky Fowler and Xander Schauffele both recorded 62s yesterday over there at the LA Country Club. You see the lowest rounds in U.S. Open history. Those two, of course, posting their 62s, beating out Johnny Miller, I remember fondly, over at Oakmont in 1973, and then Jack Nicklaus, and I always mess up the name. Please, Kelly, help me out
Tom
here.
Tom Weisskopf?
Yeah, okay, there we go. I always want to do the P, Weisskopf. okay. And then a glut of other golfers, the 63s at a different amount of courses in U.S. Opens. My guy Tommy Fleetwood there. I invoked the memory of Shinnecock about, what, 2 or 3 days ago when we were talking about Fleetwood at the U.S. Open. But how about that yesterday, huh? And I guess this is kind of what I'll ask you, Kelly, because you're the more hardcore golf guy. But I feel like this is kind of what you get every once in a while. If you're going to do something new in terms of a course that maybe you're not too familiar with, you run the risk of something like this, where the U.S. Open is supposed to be the biggest test in golf. It was supposed to be something that makes these guys want to snap the clubs over their legs. Some even, our own Femi Abebefe, complains about the U.S. Open and says, like, hey, man, this is too hard. I want to watch something. Femi also complained on Twitter, I'll call him out, that this was too easy. So I don't know what you want, Femi. But regardless, what'd you make of play yesterday? Was that just a flash in the pan? Or from what you saw yesterday, is this how the course is going to play? And we're going to have a U.S. Open with scores that are like, you know, 12 under, 13 under, 14 under to win this thing.
Yeah, I think a little bit of both. We saw, I think there's a couple things. First round, you're usually always going to get easier rounds than what you're going to see on the weekend, okay, just because of pin location, and that's going to always matter, especially if you've looked at these green complexes all week. They are not your usual green complexes that you're going to see on the PGA Tour. A lot of different shaped greens where you could put pins in very different difficult spots. I would expect to see that more on the weekend. I didn't really catch a lot from what at least tournament officials said yesterday, JVT. I don't think I would expect a ton of change with the course today, at least. Okay. I think it's going to wait till the weekend. But what you saw yesterday was, look, it was overcast most of the day, so those greens don't get baked out by the sun all day and get a lot faster, which I would expect to happen today. So scoring in the afternoon, I think, is going to be tougher today. But the sun bakes out those greens. That becomes an issue. So there was a lot. It was favorable conditions for a lot of those golfers yesterday. I will point out, though, that also a lot of these golfers were saying during their practice rounds all week that, hey, a lot of them thought there were 62, 63s out there. I think it was JT who, like, they weren't really keeping track, but basically shot a 61 during his practice round. They thought there were some low scores out there. They also warned, though, hey, there's going to be 80s out there, too, and people get stuck in the Barranca and that whole mess, the dried-out creek bed and everything. And what we saw, or at least from what I felt I saw yesterday, is seemingly everybody that ended up in that thing was able to get out of it relatively cleanly. You know, Ricky Fowler had that ridiculous shot from the bridge. So I don't, you know, and maybe those, you know, maybe playing out of that JVT is a little easier than actually everybody thought it was going to be. And like you said, it's a course we really haven't seen before. So we thought that was going to be the most penal area of the golf course because there's no water. And maybe it doesn't end up being as difficult as we thought. I don't think that's going to happen. I think once this weekend comes, we're going to see a tougher golf course.
Yeah, and one of the things that I thought of, we have that graphic right there in terms of all the, you know, the lowest rounds in U.S. Open history. And one of the things that stuck out, because I remember this, Aaron Hills was the one where the golfers openly complained about how easy it was, correct? That was back in 2017. Justin Thomas, of course, we're invoking that. But if I remember correctly, that's the one in Wisconsin. Over at Aaron Hills, where Justin Thomas shoots that 63, and there were massive complaints about how easy that thing was in terms of the way that it ended up. And I believe the winner ended up pretty low under par, if I remember correctly. Was it? That was the first round. I think the winner ended up over double digits of par. Yeah, 16 under par, the winner, and that was Brooks Koepka. So. Yeah. Well, you see there, U.S. Open round one scoring stats, the field average 71.38. The morning and evening, not too much separation. The morning wave, though, at 71.58. The PM wave at 71.18. And then you see the front nine to the back nine, and the difference is there. 37 rounds in the 60s and none in the 80s over at a U.S. Open. So
that's the big one, though, that front nine, back nine split. If you're looking at live betting or anything like that, keep that in mind. throughout the entire week. We kind of thought it was going to set up that way. That's the one thing we did see play out yesterday, of that front nine being a whole lot easier than that back nine.
So let me ask you this. Over at VSiN.com, you can sign up for the newsletter. You get it in your mailbox every morning. I was reading mine today. Matt Eumanns had a blurb in there, and I thought it was a good idea, so I tailed Matt a little bit. I did add one golfer to the portfolio in between rounds. Considering how we saw the way that this course played, and I'm paraphrasing a little bit what Matt said in the newsletter, but there's obviously going to be some 60s out there, some low 60s potentially. That means guys that are in the range of 2-under, 1-under, still have a shot to make a push to get back into this thing. John Rahm at 24-1, an adjusted price there. He was over at Circa at 24-1 to win this thing after the first round. That was the one that I added to the portfolio. I've actually got a couple of guys that are kind of near the top, but for the most part, I thought, you know what? If there is a guy that's capable of a very low round, as all of these guys are, and if you thought that Rahm was going to be pretty live here, I don't even think it, what is he, 1-under, that he's going to be like totally toast after just one round here.
Well, I'm joining you there, JVT, because I did all the same thing. Yeah, I did the same thing. The way I set up my outright card was always kind of with the hope that I was able to get in on John Rahm or Scotty Scheffler live here at some point, or both. So, yeah, 24-1 over at Circa. I think I was shopping around the rest of the country. I think it was it's 18 at DraftKings right now. I think if you're looking anything around 20, I think it's a good play on John Rahm. I mean, he's still a guy that I believe in a lot here, and has the game, has the perfect game to truly contend here. So, look, Ricky and Xander, I don't think you're going to expect them to go out and do what they did every day like they did in that first round. And if this course gets a little tougher, these scores are going to continue to bunch together.
And narratively, it's fascinating because it's these two guys, right? It's Ricky Fowler and Xander Schauffele, the guys that we've been kind of waiting for to get this thing done in these moments. I'm actually, like, the pressure's got to be so heavy for both of those guys to get out to the start that they did. To have the narrative pressure around them, we've all been waiting for it. And you still have guys like Rory had a good day yesterday. You got a lot of guys that are still going to be in this mix. So it's going to be fun to track. Yep. All right, we're not done with the US Open. I have one more question for Kelly. We've also got to get to a lot from last night, including, man, if there was, in the month of June, an MVP-type series in baseball, Shohei Ohtani just had it.
The Sports Betting Network.
Time to download Nevada's premier sports betting app, BetMGM Sports. BetMGM has all your favorite wagering options, along with in-game betting and boosted odds specials, and a little bit more. Download the BetMGM app today. Stop by any MGM casino, the Strip, with your state-issued ID, open an account, and start placing sports bets from anywhere in Nevada. Whatever your sport, whatever your betting style, you're going to love BetMGM's state-of-the-art technology and fan-friendly specials every day of the week. Visit BetMGM for terms. It's got to be 21 and in Nevada. Please gamble responsibly. If you have a problem, 1-800-522-4700. All right, we did kind of bury the lead there. We should note, we talked about the two guys at the top over at the U.S. Open, but your adjusted odds for the U.S. Open as we enter round two, we are underway. Early golfers are out on the course. Xander Schauffele is the favorite over at DraftKings, plus 320. Rory McIlroy right behind him at 5-1. Scotty Scheffler and Ricky Fowler both sitting at 650. Dustin Johnson at 850. And then you get into the double digits after that. Wyndham Clark at 12. John Rahm at 18 over at DraftKings. Again, if you shopped around, you could have gotten Rahm at 24-1. DeChambeau at 22-1. That's one of the golfers, too. Got a top 20. That's a solid day for him in the top 20. Max Homa in the top 20 as well. Then you get Hovland and Homa and Finau all at 35-1. Siwoo Kim at 45-1.
I think the other bet I'm going to add, John, since I have the ability as of yesterday, is to add that John Rahm live top 10. That's the other one.
Yeah, plus 115.
I bet the outright, but Caesars here in town, we got plus 115 as well. So I think that's a good bet on a top 10 for Rahm.
You love that Caesars. That's so great. Oh yeah.
Do we want to discuss our same game parlay from yesterday?
Bro, how the two guys didn't even get. That was great. I mean, I guess that's the danger. That's the danger of putting those especially at the start of it, right? Yeah. Xander Schauffele the favorite here. So we move on from this. Actually, anyway, were you outside of Rahm? What are you thinking of adding? Anything else?
No, nothing else. I think that the other guy that would be interesting is, look, Dustin Johnson was unbelievable yesterday. Tee to green gained over 7 strokes. Like, that is incredible. When you go back and just look historically what this guy's done, tee to green gaining strokes, it is, I mean, he's up there with some of the all-time greats in U.S. Open history here. So, yeah. That would be the only other guy I would possibly consider. But, you know, again, like we've talked about JVT, he's not a guy I've got enough stat info on and what he's done for live here over the past few months.
So I mentioned I had a question for you. When you watch a round, what are you looking for statistically that you want to latch on to that would give you an idea of maybe a golfer having either better fortunes coming or if a guy got kind of lucky through a first round, for lack of a better term, got a little lucky?
Yeah, I think it's at tougher courses like this, I think it's usually where I dial back live betting a little bit. Mm-hmm. But what you're usually looking for is those guys that putt well over their heads. And, like, I mean, Ricky Fowler, I hate to say it, he was good tee to green yesterday, but he also gained almost 5 strokes on the field putting. There's good putters. On the tour, there are guys that are better putting better putters than others, but that is a high variance part of the game, right? That is like 3-point shooting in the NBA when we talk about it. So you kind of look for those guys that had really, really bad putting rounds or really good putting rounds, and you kind of expect those guys to regress the mean a little bit more.
I feel like after round one, this is just my thought, because you have more leeway, right, for 3 rounds coming. Is round one when you want to get the adjusted odds or no?
I usually wait a little bit longer. Okay. Rom I jumped on only because I already had that circled as kind of my plan for this tournament anyways. So I'm hoping that I never see odds this long again on John Rom. So that's why I bet him now. But yeah, usually what I like to do, JVT, is wait till after the cut. Wait till after the cut. You get a better feel heading into the weekend of what odds look like, what golfers have looked like. And all that good stuff. You can reevaluate your position, see if some of your bets maybe already got blown up, if guys did miss the cut, all that stuff. I think it's a good time to evaluate after that second round.
All right, with that, we move on. National Football League, we have a lot of big names that are out and available. I know one of the things you wanted to hit on, and I think this is something that I think this is legitimately going to happen. I would argue the Patriots have a history of doing this thing. So we get a report the other day that the Patriots are going to put the full court press on DeAndre Hopkins in this meeting that they're going to have, work out whatever it's going to be, to get him to stick around. And I think that this is something I invoke this. I don't know if we talked about this on the air, but, you know, if you look through Patriots past, we'll say, I think there's quite a few names in terms of wide receivers that they have gone to go grab, whether it's the big name of Randy Moss, Chad Ochocinco, onwards. There's a lot of different dudes that have come in as wide receivers, because let's be honest, as the Patriots are even money favorites to grab DeAndre Hopkins and where he will play next.
Yep.
Bill Belichick doesn't have a really long and like true history of drafting and developing wide receivers, right? Like, a lot of the most successful receivers that you've seen from the New England Patriots in his time there have been guys that have come in from other teams. And I think that this is just something that fits really well. Obviously, he's played in Bill O'Brien's system. There's familiarity there. Mac Jones needs like a number one target at the very most to really, I think, get back to the form that he's capable of being. That was his first year, his rookie year, now in a new offense and a real offense at that. Tell me why the Patriots aren't odds-on favorites
I don't know.
DeAndre Hopkins.
You and I talked about this a little bit after the show yesterday. It was plus 115 then, so I guess it has moved 15 cents. But I'm with you, man. I mean, hey, he met with them, what, over the course of the past 2 days, I believe. Does plan on making other visits, I know. But, man, this feels way too obvious. Like, this is going to happen, and I mean, what the only pushback I have in my own mind is Bill O'Brien, right? It was apparently they didn't have a good relationship together when they were together in Houston. That's like the only thing I've heard. But why would he even be in for a visit?
Well,
if they thought they couldn't work together,
I don't know if Hopkins was quoted or if it was a report. But either way, the information is out there that they're fine.
They're fine.
Relationship wise, that like they're fine. I think this is really interesting because you look around, if we're talking about, because I've said this a lot, like, I think the Patriots are a pretty undervalued team as we head into the next NFL season.
Yep.
Defensively, they're a very good team. They were one of the best ones last year statistically. If you look at some of the EPA numbers, I do think that Mac Jones is closer. I always find it funny. I always say this, Kelly, like, it's funny what we weight as true and don't. And in 2 seasons, for some reason, the masses think, oh, the bad Mac Jones in an offense that wasn't even constructed very well is the real Mac Jones, not the Mac Jones that played under Josh McDaniels. McDaniels. I think it gives you a low key chance to at least make it to the playoffs. Like if you're joining the New England Patriots, you're at the very least making them better. If you're DeAndre
Hopkins, I think one of the easier things here is look at that Patriots depth chart. They have like that wide receiver room is pretty bleak. You got to add. I think you do it, JVT. I think you do it just to figure out. You've got to know at some point what you have in Mac Jones. Like, I know you are higher on him than I am, but like after a big year one, he took a major step back. I think it's easy and partially true to make the argument that, hey, this guy had no help on the offense last year, either player-wise or coaching, right? Yep. He had a defensive coordinator as his offensive coordinator. Like, you need to bring weapons in like this just to figure out if this is truly your franchise quarterback going forward or if you need to cut him loose sooner than later. Like, these teams that take quarterbacks and sit on them forever to figure out what they got, I think is the worst thing you can do in the NFL.
Jordan Love?
Yeah.
Green Bay Packers?
No, nah, but it's like, you know, like I always give credit. Like we might think what we want to think about the Cardinals this year, but I always give them credit for cutting Josh Rosen loose as soon as they did and moving on.
Yeah.
You got a bad hand, muck it away and go get a better hand.
Well, it helps when you get the first overall pick.
Exactly.
Right? So if you're going to do it. And for the pay, like I said, at the very least two, like you have at least one somewhat large sample size of 16 games where he led you to 10 wins. That tells you that he's at least capable of playing some pretty good football. And that year, too, they had like a 7-week stretch where I think they covered 6 out of 7 games on the way to the postseason. I thought they were really, really freaking good. So now we move on to our next player really quickly. So I think that this is good. Like the Patriots, we have good information. That's going to be the case. I think Hopkins is going to end up being a New England Patriot.
Real quick on that. Like, it's Patriots are nothing right now, right? Like, you can't bet anyone else right now.
I think – so there was the thought of the Bills. And
right.
I think that maybe they're up there because of everything that happened with Stephon Diggs, but it seems to
I'm
be okay
I'm just not willing
now.
To gamble on 3.5 to 1 on that, right?
Correct. Also, I don't think this is real. Twitter, I don't know. Did you see the alleged reason why Stephon Diggs did what he did?
No, I didn't, but
I don't think this is true, but I kind of hope it is. I'm like 95% it's not true, but I'll recklessly speculate. That he was mad that Josh Allen got the cover of Madden.
Oh, my gosh. I would really hope that's not true.
But look, I'll say this. Remember, what was he saying? What they all saying was, some of it was football. Some of it was, like, some personal stuff. Josh Allen even said, I have to do, like, he blamed himself.
Mm-hmm.
Could it actually be true that Stephon Diggs felt that he deserved more credit and should have been on the cover of Madden with Josh Allen?
I think that part's absurd. I think there could be problems between the two of them.
Yeah.
And I think Josh Allen spoke honestly about it, maybe too honestly. I don't really know.
It was weird. Both him and McDermott.
Yeah, like, really I kind of want to respect what Josh Allen did, but maybe he spoke completely out of turn. Yep. You know what I mean?
All right, we'll get to the NBA draft. We had a lot of movers over the last 24 hours. We'll discuss why that is, and we have a surprising name that popped up for the 5th overall pick. We'll discuss that when we come back here on The Numbers Game.
The Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Become a smarter sports bettor with VSiN Pro subscription. For a limited time, you can sign up for just $9.99 and get full access to everything you do. That would include daily pro picks and all the summer action, including NFL and college football futures, premium analysis from our top team of handicappers and industry experts, 24/7 video access and pro tools like our exclusive betting split showing you where the public and sharp money is going to give you an edge. Don't miss out on our lowest intro price of the year. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe to sign up today. All right, a numbers game here on VSiN. Jonathan Von Tobel filling in for Gil Alexander. NBA draft, of course, that is quickly approaching, less than a week away. Next Thursday, we will hear names called, and markets are starting to go up a little bit more. I thought it was fascinating, though, because we talked about this yesterday, and while we were recording Hardwood Handicappers, Kelly, and while we were on the air just discussing it, there was a lot of movement in the NBA betting market when it came to the draft. And I thought it was worth at least highlighting a couple of them before we get to some of the surprising names that are starting to pop up, because now you're getting more information. And I would say that more information about now is probably going to be a little bit more accurate. But let's first talk about some of the odd shifts that we've seen when it comes to at least some of the props that have been up there for a while. First of which is, let's talk about second overall picks. So this was one that you had brought up ever, like just slowly but surely. We saw that the second overall pick odds for Brandon Miller were just moving in his direction steadily. And yet, here you go. -250 was, I think, the peak price that I saw for him. As of this morning, minus 170. Again, this happened over the last 24 hours. So he's down to minus 170 to go second overall. Scoot Henderson, up to plus 110. Scoot Henderson to go third overall goes from minus 185 yesterday to minus 150. And I will say this does come on the heels. I don't know if you listened yesterday, Kelly, but there was a podcast, Jonathan Givony and Zach Lowe and Bobby Marks. Yep. They were they did a podcast talk about the draft. And Jonathan Givony actually gave some more like words to the workouts over the weekend. Scoot Henderson apparently killed the workout against Charlotte for Charlotte. And Brandon Miller, he was actually there. They worked out together. Maybe not the best when it came to Brandon Miller's workout. Conditioning was an issue. But Givony still said that Miller would probably be the selection, just that the gap between them had shrunk. And on the heels of that podcast, what do you get? A shrink of the odds, right? Brandon Miller down to minus 170. The other, Amon Thompson over Asar Thompson. We've seen this climb back. Goes from minus 210 to minus 350. Again, this is over the course of the last 24 hours. And then Asar Thompson over Jairus Walker. Walker, all of a sudden, after sliding, in terms of the odds at least, is making a late push now. Asar Thompson got as high as minus 160, now minus 115. I think Walker's one of the interesting ones because, like I said, hadn't really heard anything positive or anything. He just kept sliding because everybody else was moving up. Now, all of a sudden, you know what it reminds me of? It's like the quarterbacks, except at a lesser level, which is if you looked at C.J. Stroud, for a while, what did we know? It was going to be why is his name escaping me? Wow. Bryce Young. Yeah. It was Bryce Young, number one, C.J. Stroud, number two. Stroud kind of slips. Everybody's like, watch out, Stroud could fall. And then right at the time we get to the draft, what happens? Stroud was right back. He was going to be the second quarterback taken. Same thing here maybe with Jairus Walker. Like, for a while, Walker was going to be like the fifth guy in that mix, whatever. He starts to slide, and now we're starting to see that snap back for Walker.
Yeah, I mean, I'm getting that feeling, you know, because I didn't have a great NFL draft. I'm getting that feeling for number two, number three.
Right, yep.
Right? It was, for how long was it Scoot was the – I mean, at this time a year ago, we were talking about Scoot versus Wembanyama for the first overall pick, right? Like, that's what we were talking about. And then a couple months later, it was like, all right, well, Wembanyama's obviously the number one pick, but Scoot's number two right behind it. And ever since, like, the NCAA tournament, we've had this shift towards Brandon Miller. And, like, could that same thing be happening at two at three? And I'm going to probably vomit if it does.
Right.
Because I've got nice tickets on Brandon Miller, too, as do you, and Scoot three. But, yeah, I think the way to read into the rest of the top 10, I know we're going to look at odds here in a sec on those, but the Thompson brothers are the key to figuring out how this order is going to go.
Yep.
And, JVZ, I don't know if anybody has a real firm handle on what's going to happen with those two guys. And a lot of it, not just them, has to do with teams too, right? Yep. Team needs and team trades and a lot of these reports of teams wanting to move up. But what you get – as far as kind of like the big board, right, it's just a big board of talent. It's a lot of guards after Victor Wembanyama, right? So there's going to be teams that even though they might be the more talented players, they might fall just because teams want a more secure big men or wing player from a college, right? I think that's what you're seeing with the, you know, Hendricks of the world, the Walkers of the world, you know, even Derek Lively out of Duke, right? I think there is at least a more sense of comfort for going after one of these big guys, wing players, instead of one of these unknown guards, which I think there's still a little bit of a feeling of.
Yep, absolutely. So you mentioned the top 10. So we have two massive favorites to land inside of the top 10, and that is rightfully so. Anthony Black is minus 3,000 to be a top 10 selection. This is an index prop, so it can't come in and bet the no. This is just odds to be drafted top 10. So Anthony Black at the top, minus 3,000. Taylor Hendricks, minus 2,000. I mentioned a surprising name that was tied to the Detroit Pistons in one of the most recent articles over the Athletic. Hendricks was one of them. Taylor Hendricks is one of the names apparently being thrown around for the Detroit Pistons at number five. I would assume it's the way that the board breaks one through four, depending on what the Detroit Pistons are going to do there. But Hendricks is, I think, one of those risers. Initially, his draft position prop 9.5, now 8.5. He does seem a near certainty to be selected in the top 10. So what's interesting here is, so let's take a look overall. In no particular order, Kelly, we're talking about Wembanyama. Go ahead.
No. That's what you have to do first before looking at this market, right?
So it's Wembanyama, Brandon Miller, it is Scoot Henderson, it is Amon Thompson, it is Cam Whitmore. In no particular order either, I would say Asar Thompson, Jairus Walker are near certainty to be top 10 picks? Would you say that?
Yes.
I haven't seen
Taylor Hendricks.
Yeah, yeah, and I haven't seen anything of it. So then, yeah, we're talking about, what, up to 7. Let's go Taylor Hendricks. That would be 8. So really, you're trying to find wiggle room here when you're betting this on 2 guys. Anthony Black is probably one of them. And really, and I think this actually strengthens it, Anthony Black's been tied to the Washington Wizards in almost every single draft. Yep. Every mock draft that you look at, every single thing. I don't think I've seen a lot of mock drafts that don't have Anthony Black getting selected number 9.
And outside of that, JVC, I just haven't heard. It's another guy you haven't really heard much about, right? Yep. Like, we heard about him all throughout the college basketball season as being a lottery pick. But then we really haven't heard much in the past, I don't know, 2 months.
Yep. And I have to tell you, I don't know what you would do with this market overall. Because if that's all certain, so we essentially have 9 selections that we're pretty sure are going to be top 10 picks. So of these guys, you're essentially saying, which one's going to sneak into number 10? And if you look at it, the problem with it is that the 10th overall selection right now is the Dallas Mavericks. The Mavericks, by all accounts, want to shop that pick. They wanted a top 10 pick for a reason, so they could use it to go do something. Because their roster is extremely thin. They don't know what's going to happen. They want to add a piece next to Luka Doncic and what they would hope would be Kyrie Irving. So you don't really know what the selection is going to be, because I don't think we know the team who's making that 10th overall pick.
Yeah. I tend to think it's that Derek Lively has a really good chance of going with that 10th spot. But to your point, I think that it's so up in the air that I almost think you need to look further down the board. And the only name I'm going to bring up here that I would maybe consider is Bilal Coulibaly, yep, the teammate of Victor Wembanyama, who has been – he's just been rising. He's been rising as his teams continue to play. That's something that Luke brought up yesterday. It's a great point, where all these other guys are just doing workouts and not playing right now. You know, they've been playing the Metropolitans have been playing up until what? It was a week ago?
It's worth noting, Gavoni put in his latest mock draft that the Utah Jazz, who picked number 9, did send people just last week to go give him another look while he was playing. So there's at least interest there.
I think if you're looking at these odds, I'd rather take a longer shot 5-1 price on him than you know, Derek Lively, I think, has a good chance of going in that top 10. But again, we're really only talking about kind of one pick here. At least if you assume, you know, you assume the Thompson twins, nothing's going to happen there, right? Nobody's going to fall like crazy. If we assume we kind of know 8 to 9 names, then I think you got to go with a longer shot here.
Yep, I would agree with that. Absolutely. Yeah, because everything
else.
And
he's the only one. Like, I mean, any of these other guys, though, around his odds, have you even heard of going in the top 10?
Nah, I mean, so at one point early on, Jalen Hood-Schifino was a guy that maybe could have made it in there for upside. There was a couple of mock drafts that tied the Jazz to him, but that's been gone for a while now. He's now in the mid, 12 to 14 range from what I've seen. I think that's really the only name out of all of these. It's the only name that I've seen, at least at one point in some mock drafts that I've read, inside of the top 10. And to your point about Grady Dick, all accounts are he's one of those that has improved his stock because of the way that his offseason has gone in terms of workouts, in terms of the way that he's met with teams and whatnot. So we'll see if that's going to be the case. Lively's going to be a good center, but it's going to be interesting to see if that's going to be worth a top 10 selection.
Right.
You know?
Which is, I think, that is the statement about him, right? Yeah. I think, does his game translate? I don't know. I think he took like 13 threes last year and made like 2 of them. Yep. So, you know, what does that mean? Is that a guy that you're going to try to stretch the floor with more over time? Or no, are we just a 7'1" old school center and you can't do much beyond that? I don't know.
I do love that in Gavoni's latest mock draft, the whole intro is about how Scoot Henderson's still in play at number 2. And then he still puts Brandon Miller at number 2. I think that kind of tells you a little bit.
I read that this morning and got confused, too.
Right. Like, that's the whole lead of the article. And then it's like, nope, he's actually not moving up, though. All right, we got plenty left to get to. I'm not going to get excited. We have to talk about Ohtani really quickly when we come back. The guy was brilliant in this series against Texas. And those Angels, man, one game out of the wild card.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Turn a loss into a win with BetMGM, official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. Place a same game parlay wager with at least 4 legs on any MLB game. If all legs of the parlay hit but 1, you'll get your stake back and bonus bets up to $25. Only at BetMGM. Best place to bet on baseball. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly and offer resources to help you make appropriate choices. BetMGM.com for terms. Got to be 21. New and existing customer offer. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. They expire 7 days from issuance. Please gamble responsibly. If you have a gambling problem, 1-800-GAMBLER is the number. Promotion not available in D.C., Mississippi, Nevada, and New York. Back here on the Numbers Game, Jonathan Von Tobel, last day filling in for Gil Alexander. He'll be back on Monday. Kelly Bidlin is here. I know you're all happy to hear that. Okay. Kelly, I got to tell you, it happens almost every year. For those who don't know, I'm rocking the red for a reason today, too. I'm an Angels fan. Angels are excited. Why you make a face?
I didn't know where you were going with this.
What do you mean? Why, we were going to talk about it. This is what we're supposed to talk about.
Cool. I didn't know that's why you wore the red.
No, I just was kidding. I just pulled this out. It just happened to be that we're talking about it right now. Shohei Ohtani just had a series, and it was a big – we always do this. It's only June. No, man. We're 70-ish games into this thing. We're quickly approaching the halfway point. You've got to start winning some of these games. Ohtani now minus 300 favorite to an American League MVP. For those who do not know what Shohei Ohtani just did in the series against the Texas Rangers, how about this? Four games. Angels take 3 of 4, by the way, from the division leader, so that's big. One game out of the wild card. Ohtani in this series, 7 hits – on 12 at-bats, 20 plate appearances, hit 4 home runs, drove in 8, got walked 7 times. He had multiple high-leverage spots, too, including in one of the games where he hits a game-tying shot and then in extras hits what was going to be the eventual game-winning 2-run shot. He has been brilliant. I have to look this up. This is one of my favorite stats. I saved this just for anybody out there who would enjoy these kind of numbers. Longest opposite field home runs of the season. Ohtani just hit one in this series. Ohtani, 459 feet on Monday. Shohei Ohtani, 453 feet yesterday. And then Ohtani, 443 feet. That would be, the day before yesterday. And then yesterday, he had 443 feet. So he had, just to recap, because I didn't say that right, he had the 3 longest opposite field home runs in this series against the Texas Rangers. And the best part about it from yesterday, by the way, he goes out because we had talked about the struggles, right? Maybe he had been regressing a little bit as a pitcher, just a bit. 6 innings pitched, 2 hits, 6 hits, 2 earned runs, struck out 3, and helped the Angels win that final game and win the series. The guy was brilliant this week. Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, well, I caught some of that yesterday. He's incredible. So minus 300, is that fair?
I think at this point, and here's the thing, because this is the other part, because everybody keeps throwing this out there. I'm wholeheartedly convinced. Femi keeps trying to convince me that otherwise, he's not going anywhere. They're not trading him.
Yeah.
So I know that there's a lot of people who thought like, hey, maybe you look around the American League. If he's traded away, especially in the National League, like, that's going to make some sort of difference. He's not going to be – no. They are 1 game out of the wild card. They are at least a very adequate team. I think that they're going to be in play for one of these guys, whether it's Marcus Stroman or Eduardo Rodriguez, somebody to acquire potentially to add to their arms. I think that he's going to be around for a while. Like, he's going to be with the Angels. And thus, you know, do I always look at, like, minus 300 at this point of the year and kind of balk a little bit and be like, man, that's a high price at this point of the season? Sure. But if he's just going to continue to play, it's going to be hard with guys like Aaron Judge missing time for anybody to, I think, realistically catch him for MVP.
Yeah, I know the one that Matt Brown, Paul Spohr were both talking about earlier in the week was Wander Franco.
Yeah, Wander Franco.
Which I think makes sense, but even it's amazing how things can change in a few days, right? And it's I mean, the trade stuff. That's a fair discussion before the season, right? But now things have changed, right? Like you said, you're with a team that is way more competitive than maybe a lot of people thought they were going to be. You're a team that's 4.5 games out of the division, out of the top of the division. I think this completely changes what your strategy might have been. Maybe you were going to shop him before this. Maybe you had plans in season to shop him and see if you got a ridiculous offer. But now why would you now? Yep. You actually have a chance to make a run here. And this is what, his best season so far to this date? Like, of all the crazy Shohei hype the past couple years, it doesn't even compare to what he's done so far.
The Angels have won 9 of 11. He has homered in every game in that span. He is now tied for the lead in terms of home runs after this stretch that he has been on. He's been absolutely on fire at the plate. So now, and that was the interesting part, too, about this whole thing, is if you look at, Phil, I'm getting tweets live. He would look great in pinstripes. That's just a tweet I got. No, he would not, all right? Ohtani looks great in the crimson. He looks absolutely fantastic. By the way, I will never forget this. For those Yankee fans who want him, I will never forget. I'll have to send this clip next time I fill in, Kelly. There was a clip when Ohtani was coming out where he chose the Angels, where Mike Francesa on MLB TV is like, nah, the Yankees don't want him. They're lucky they don't get him. He looks terrible. It was right after his tough spring training, his first year in the majors. Yeah, I think that looked a little wrong. But this Angels team, I'll say this. Do I think they're going to win the division? No. But I think if you're looking at odds to make the playoffs, I think they're – we talked about this yesterday with Joe Sheehan. I think they're in a pretty good position here. I'm going to let myself dream a little bit. I think there's a very good shot that we're actually going to see Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani in the playoffs together this year.
Uh-oh. JVT calling his shot.
I think so. Like
Angels to make the playoffs, yes, plus 165, no, minus 190.
Yep. I mean, if they're, and here's the thing. If they add, too, that's the thing. You know, Sheehan made a really great point. If they add depth, they have depth. Oh, boy, just got some big breaking news, Kelly. NBA related. I think you can guess what it is.
Oh.
You want it? Either way.
Yeah, we got to go here. Ja Morant. Waits in.
Yep. So it's in the Friday news dump, although it's a little early. So we get the news cycle here it just cuts me off from my ranting about the Ohtani of the Angels. The NBA.
To sum it all up, JVT loves Ohtani. He doesn't really know if he'd bet it at minus 300, but he's probably going to be the AL MVP.
That's a good thing. Yes. Minus 300 is a little high at this point of the season. He's probably going to win it, but those odds are a little too much. Also, wouldn't say no to a plus price of about plus 120 for the Angels to make it to the playoffs. Having said that, the news is in. Ja Morant officially suspended 25 games, apparently, according to Shams Charania. I shouldn't say officially because Shams could be wrong. Very low probability that that's going to be the case. So Ja Morant suspended 25 games. That's kind of about there. Is that what you were expecting? I actually didn't expect a big one. Personally, I thought, you know, Adam Silver, given the news that had come out about the fake gun, if that was even real or anything like that, that it was going to be a pretty light suspension. 25 games, though, out of an 82-game stretch, pretty good. So no John Morant for 25 games for the Memphis Grizzlies as we head into next year.
Yeah, so the 25, I think, is an important number. And this was where you and I were discussing this off-air yesterday of what we thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to be more. I did think the 50-game projections were pretty accurate. In the past few days, though, I've heard, I think Woj brought it up, you know, the Miles Bridges situation I know they are different things we're talking about here, but he was suspended, I think it was 30 games by the league for a criminal offense.
Yep.
You got to keep in mind, Ja Morant has not been charged with anything here. So I think that's why that 25 could make some sense. I also think that if you're not thinking it's stern enough, 25 games takes him out of the running for all NBA awards.
Yep.
So you have to play, it's a minimum of 65 games. So all the NBA awards for next season, he's going to be ineligible for as far as,
now here's,
what is it, MVP, Defensive Player of the Year, all NBA honors.
We should clarify, because I think people try to make this case. Remember, Kelly, that is the threshold that they set, but they also said in the language, extenuating circumstances, you could make the – like certain guys could still qualify if they missed games.
Okay,
however,
that's stupid, so never mind.
Right, no, I think you're right. I just wanted to clarify because – no, because I think people are going to make that argument. What I would say is there is no way in hell that people – that they're going to allow Ja Morant, the extenuating circumstances, being suspended 25 games. So I think people would look at that and go, well, maybe he's still got a shot. I would say no, absolutely not. So I think you're right in pointing that out.
I think it's important, and we're probably going to have to reiterate this a bunch throughout the summer, but I think it's important to keep that in mind because I wouldn't be shocked if, like, look, the sports books aren't trying to dupe you, but his name might still show up depending on some sports books for some of these awards, and he is going to have no chance of winning them.
No, not at all. Should be $5,000, actually $500,000 to one. To him to win like an MVP or anything like that.
Because he'd have to, like, you know, average 40 points a game and like save a baby panda or something.
Never miss
like
a game. Yes,
exactly.
Maybe not a panda. Maybe a koala. Wojnarowski did add to his report, suspension will come with conditions for his return. So we'll see exactly what that is going to be. We'll find that out. But again, for those who are just tuning in right now, Ja Morant has been suspended, according to Adrian Wojnarowski and Shams Charania, for 25 games to start the 2023-2024 NBA season. Now, the other part about this, can I just say, I guess if you want to find the silver lining, if you're somebody who, you know, thinks Memphis is going to be good, whatever, Ja Morant is a guy who's missed a lot of time, and he has an overtly physical style of play. Maybe it's actually, in terms of longevity, a good thing for him to not play the first 25 games. Might be a slow build-up, but might actually be fully healthy by the time he gets to the
postseason. I mean, and hey, this is absolutely a team that you could clearly see going out to a slow start and pick it up after he comes back.
Second hour of a numbers game on the way here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.